Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Lots coming your way this hour. In just a few minutes, Lynn Ta of Axios on why Iowa is facing extra challenges recruiting teachers, especially from out of state, due to our state's political climate. In the second half hour, what the UI women will face in this evening's game after advancing to the Sweet 16 in March Madness. But first, Iowa Republican lawmakers continue their fast pace of work in the 2023 session. Joining us while he catches his breath at the end of another very busy week covering activity at the State House, Aaron Murphy, Des Moines Bureau Chief with the Gazette. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for making time.
Yeah, thanks as always for having me. The news cycle is relentless up at the Capitol these days. It's amazing.
Okay, let's tick through a number of these things quickly. Developments, Governor Reynolds signing into law the so-called transgender bathroom bill, also a ban on gender-affirming care for minors. These signed into law. Tell us what these laws will do.
Yeah, so I'll start with the bathroom bill that you mentioned. It prohibits transgender students and as we understand it, adults as well who visit the school for any reason. It prohibits those transgender people from using school restrooms that correspond with their gender identity. So transgender males would have to use the girls' bathrooms and vice versa. And that's going to be an interesting one now to follow even moving forward as well, because now this is something that schools have to adjust to and make accommodations for transgender students in their schools if those students wish. So something that'll have a very real impact. And then the gender affirming care ban will prohibit for any Iowans under 18 to, they can no longer receive the different treatments that are out there that help an individual, a transgender person transition genders. And some of those treatments include hormone therapies and puberty blockers, and there are some cosmetic surgeries as well. So those are no longer legal for Iowans under 18.
There's a clause, though, isn't there, 180 days if you're in those transitions right now, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. For anyone under 18 who's already started this process, they have 180 days to continue, but then at the end of those 180 days, if they're still under 18 at that point, they would have to stop then.
Okay, quickly to some other issues. Developments, a bill to address distracted driving advancing. I know this has been pursued. One, Iowa law enforcement is backing this bill for many years, supporters of this bill, but I wonder, has it reached critical mass? What would it do?
Yeah, so it would. So right now you can't text and drive. That's the current law in Iowa. And this would expand that to say you can't hold the phone in your hand and use it for anything. You can only use your phone while you're driving in hands-free mode, you know, but using Siri as a short way to explain it, you know, using voice commands to use your phone. You couldn't hold it in your hand and use it for any reason at all, even to make a call. And yeah, it's been around, like you said, law enforcement has wanted it basically ever since the texting while driving ban went into effect, because they say it's hard to enforce that because a person can just say, I wasn't texting, I was picking it up to make a phone call. So they want a hands-free ban. For the first time, it passed a full chamber in the legislature. It passed out of the Senate this year. So that's as far as it's ever gotten. Now we see if there's interest for it in the House.
Okay, we'll see. And as a programming note, on Monday on this program, we'll hear from a representative of the Iowa State Patrol backing this bill. That's a Monday on River to River. Where are we with the eminent domain issue for carbon capture pipelines at this point?
Yeah, another one that just took a significant step this week. It hasn't been around as long as hands-free driving, but it was a big discussion last year. Nothing really happened legislatively on it. This year, just this week, a bill passed out of the Iowa House, so a pretty significant movement, and it had both Democrat and Republican support, so the vote was kind of mixed. It wasn't one of those, you know, party line votes where all the two parties were unified against each other. And what this one would do would say that 90% of landowners who are involved who are in the path of these pipelines would have to voluntarily agree to that pipeline being put on their land before the company can use eminent domain to acquire any other properties on which the pipeline would go through. So a very, very high bar for those pipelines to meet before they would be able to be built. And again, that just passed the House. Much less interest for that thus far anyways on the Senate side. So that's going to be another one to watch moving forward.
Before we end here, Aaron, let's circle back to education. Wednesday, I understand Iowa Senate Republicans passed a sweeping K-12 education policy bill, now going to the House, the Iowa House, for consideration. What's in this bill?
Yeah, a lot. Kind of a lot of the things that we've heard talked about individually, the Senate Republicans decided to pack into one big bill. So it has the ban on teaching gender identity and sexual orientation through sixth grade. It says that teachers would have to get permission from parents before if a student wanted to use different pronouns. It addresses books in schools is a huge part of this, and the process by which this bill changed that what they had been debating, and what this would do was it creates a definition for age-appropriate materials, and then says that any book that doesn't meet that definition would not be allowed in schools. So it deals with the whole books in schools thing, among other provisions. So it was, like I said, it was all those things they've been discussing dumped into one big bill.
Yeah, and unlike the eminent domain, distracted driving, this is a highly partisan issue. Republicans framing it one way, and the Democrats in opposition another.
That's exactly right. And not in, like every item that I listed in there, there weren't some, like sometimes you get a big bill and the minority party, Democrats in this case, will say, well, I like some of the bill, but I can't vote for it because I don't like this part. The Democrats don't like any of it. Republicans support all of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Aaron Murphy, thanks for the update on this Friday. Des Moines Bureau Chief of the Gazette. Aaron, thank you so much. Until next time.
You bet. We'll do it again. Thanks, Ben.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Des Moines Public Schools, the district increasing its investment into staff retention. And this comes as it's becoming more difficult to recruit teachers, particularly from out of state. Lynn Tom of Axios in Des Moines has been covering this. Hi, Lynn.
Hey.
Set the scene for us, because we know we have a teacher shortage that exists and has for a while. What has created that teacher shortage?
Yeah, so we really kind of saw the teacher shortage really intensify during the pandemic. So, you know, kind of in the beginning, you know, when people were questioning whether they wanted to return to classrooms. But then, you know, once we were actually back in the classrooms, you know, teachers just faced an unprecedented amount of challenges that, you know, resulted in some of them deciding to leave. So a lot of older teachers who were ready to retire, you know, it seemed like a good time for them to make their exit. For some younger teachers, they had to deal with now the challenges brought by COVID, new regulations, new measures, as well as a whole group of students who were out of school for a long period of time and had their own behavior issues. So being a teacher currently is very difficult. It definitely kind of contributed to the shortage we're already all facing right now.
Yeah, and some school districts have been put in a really challenging position, really stretched here to accommodate their students, combining classrooms, for instance. But let's talk about the additional challenge you mentioned in your article this week, faced by superintendents when looking to recruit teachers. You were at a Des Moines Public School board meeting and discovered what?
Yeah, so the interim superintendent, Matt Smith, just talked a bit about trying to recruit teachers from out of state. And he had said that some of the recruits told him that Iowa is no longer a destination for teachers to come because of the political climate and some of the rhetoric that's been used towards education and used towards teachers in the last 2 years. So he said, you know, especially out of state, trying to convince people to come and live here, it's a bit more difficult.
And let me quote from your article, Lynn, the interim superintendent, Matt Smith. We are finding, and I am actually being told by many folks that we look to recruit from outside the state, that Iowa is no longer a destination. That's a pretty strong statement. Remind us how we got to this point. This is hearkening back to the tension that we've reported on urban school districts and the GOP legislature, right?
Yeah, so if you remember, you know, the famous quote now, you know, when former Senate President Jake Chapman last year had proposed, you know, pressing criminal charges against teachers who, you know, who provided what they viewed as obscene materials, you know, he had used the phrase that teachers have a sinister agenda. You know, that was one of those phrases that really took off, kind of went around nationally, ended up on T-shirts. But even kind of beyond that, you know, there's definitely just been a different rhetoric and tone that's been used towards education and towards teachers by our Republican lawmakers right now since 2020. You know, there's been a lot of talk about school choice. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, banning certain teachings. Like in 2021, Governor Kim Reynolds, you know, signed into law a ban teaching systemic racism and sexism. Now there's talks about, you know, requiring teachers to post their whole curriculums online. There's more talks about banning books. You know, all of this for some teachers just may be too much for them. And if they don't, you know, then they decide that they don't want to come to the state.
Interesting. I'm glad you're covering it. Lynn Taw, Axios Des Moines reporter. Until next time, Lynn, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, Robin Upsall of Iowa Capital Dispatch on a slew of false reports of emergency situations this week that affected several Iowa schools. Also on the launch of a new anonymous threat reporting app available to schools. When we return, it's your Friday News Buzz edition. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in a moment.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This week, a number of Iowa schools, you probably heard about this, a number of Iowa schools, also law enforcement involved, had to cope with a flood of so-called swatting calls. Now, these are false reports of emergency situations that bring law enforcement to the scene. Also this week, the launch of the School Safety Bureau's new anonymous threat reporting app, that announcement by Governor Kim Reynolds. Robin Upsall joins us now, reporter with Iowa Capital Dispatch. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Great to talk to you again, Ben.
Great to have you on again. Let's talk about these so-called swatting calls. What happened and when and how widespread?
Yep. So starting early in the morning on Tuesday, school districts and law enforcement received calls alleging that shootings or potential violence was occurring at Iowa school districts in at least 30 different localities. So sent messages to schools, city police, and county sheriffs throughout the state. It was incidents that were meant to bring law enforcement to these school districts, and in some cases did result in school days being canceled in some places.
So the calls warned of a shooting or a possible shooting. Where did these calls originate from? Who did it?
So they are still trying to figure that out, from what I understand, from what the Iowa Department of Public Safety officials said. It was all similar messages by someone delivering the same sort of cadence. It was someone with a accent that was, he said, not traditionally considered Iowan, so it could be an out-of-state actor, and that they were expecting it was likely one person or one entity performing these calls. But from what I understand, they have not yet found the person or people responsible for these calls yet.
Yeah, Robin, and as you outlined there, a huge response from law enforcement. I wonder, did parents get the alerts on their cell phones and so forth? Did it go that far?
I believe that depends on where it was and how local law enforcement and school officials chose to deal with it. Definitely in some areas, school districts notified parents of the situation. I know other school districts also just posted on social media, sent out emails, and especially for places that had those swatting calls later in the day, still proceeded with their school days as planned, with people knowing these calls were a hoax. But law enforcement, obviously, throughout the day made sure that they're still taking these calls seriously and still vetting everything to make sure, you know, a threat of a shooting wasn't possibly occurring.
Right. And just to emphasize to listeners, no real threats here. This was a hoax, widespread here. Why are they called swatting calls?
Yeah. So this term, I know, originates mainly in online communities where, let's say someone is streaming online, people use prank calls to have SWAT teams go in and interrupt their video, get them arrested on screen if they're playing, you know, a game or doing some other activity. And I know that that term has kind of been extrapolated to these cases where it's to get law enforcement to show up, pretty much. A hoax call that's meant to disrupt an activity at a certain location in real life.
Now, this incident was discussed also on Tuesday as the governor and state officials announced the launch of a Safe and Sound Iowa app. Robin, tell us about the app and why the governor says it's needed.
Yeah, so in 80% of school shootings and violent situations like the one that the School Safety Bureau is hoping to prevent, someone, a classmate, a teacher, had signs, warning signs that the person who committed that act was potentially a threat to themselves or other people. So this anonymous reporting app is meant as a way for people to report to law enforcement and state officials that there could be a threat, you know, that a person is showing signs of potentially dangerous actions, and be able to tell someone about those issues so that they can get help without fear of retaliation or putting themselves in violence by sharing their concerns.
So the hope here is to prevent active shooters rather than just react to them.
Correct.
Okay. Does this app and system sort out real from fake threats?
Yep. So they said that this app, by requiring a live chat option, so if a person reports a concern, they have to talk back and forth with a dispatcher to give more detail on what concerns they have, what issue is being addressed, and the person they're talking about. And when looking at other states that have these sort of preventative measures put in place, having that live chat interaction helps clear out spam and potential false threats, because people who are issuing those false threats are less likely to go through the process of, you know, talking to someone for several minutes about a case rather than just filing one.
And finally, Robin, how widespread will this app be used? Can school districts choose to use it or not, or is it in all school districts? Do you know?
Yep. So I believe it's available to all school districts. The state is hoping to get as many school districts to advertise and participate in the system as possible. They launched a big campaign with this news conference earlier this week.
Mm-hmm. Safe and Sound, the name of the app created for concerned students, teachers, and parents to anonymously report potential threats without fear of retaliation. Robin, thank you so much for this conversation. Robin Upsall, reporter with the Iowa Capital Dispatch. Take care, Robin.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. 50% of Iowans favor a bill in the legislature that would relax child labor laws. Now, this would let teens work jobs that they are now restricted from doing. Those poll numbers, 50% favoring this bill, according to a Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll released earlier this week. The proposed legislation would also lengthen the hours kids may work, as well as allow 16 and 17-year-olds to serve alcohol in bars and restaurants, but they would need written permission from their parents or legal guardians. Now, 42% of Iowans oppose the legislation. It's interesting, too. There's a partisan divide in the results. 2 in 3 Republicans support it, while a similar proportion of Democrats oppose it. Some opponents of the bill worry about exploitation of kids, about their safety, while some backers argue that, well, kids benefit from the work experience at an early age. Iowa labor groups fighting the bill. They say the Republican-led legislature is trying to put kids in jobs that employers can't fill with adults amid this worker shortage. They also say the bill would roll back decades of protections put in place in an era when children were injured, sometimes killed, in low-wage jobs. Let's get the view from labor economist Peter Erasm of Iowa State University. Hello again, Peter.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going fine. Let's get your take on this proposal. What do you make of it and this debate?
Well, I think it's important to put this in context. The actual fraction of teenagers who are working in the United States has been falling steadily. It actually peaked in 1978 at roughly 60%. And since then, it's steadily declined. It declined precipitously in the Great Recession. And it's currently only about one-third during the school year and only about a little over 40% during the summer months. So this bill is actually coming at a time where it's not obvious that there are that many teenagers who want to work who are not working.
Mm-hmm. What's been driving that number down?
Well, it appears that a lot of it is alternative uses of teenager time, whether it's during the summer working in sort of toward athletics and other types of recreational uses of time. But during the school year, there's a general greater concentration on trying to focus on either school extracurriculars or additional ways of studying, you know, in anticipation of a future career post high school.
Mm-hmm. What impact do you feel this law might have on our worker shortage in the economic landscape?
Well, there was a law passed in Wisconsin now about 10 years ago that tried to relax restrictions on hours for 16 to 17-year-olds. It had no appreciable impact on the proportion of teenagers who wanted to have a job. It had a small impact of increased employment for the ones who did want jobs, in part because the hours restrictions may have been a nuisance for employers. And so by relaxing those hours restrictions, it made the teenagers more attractive. But the effects were very small.
Mm-hmm. Are there certain sectors in particular that were affected?
It's not obvious that it was any particular sector of the economy. The results were so small that the only way that you could actually get a significant effect was to aggregate it across all sectors.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to the arguments of Iowa labor groups opposing this bill?
Well, there are reasons why you want to use protective legislation to keep young people from from working, but some of them probably aren't all that necessary. I mean, there are reasons why if you're working in manufacturing, particularly in an assembly type operation, that you're not going to be wanting people who are effectively working part-time and for a short period. You want people who are experienced and are going to be there at regular hours of the day. It's not clear to me that the sorts of expansions in terms of the types of sectors where people will work are sectors where employers are anxious to have teenagers on the shop floor.
Mm-hmm. Peter, can you give us some historical context for this debate? Why do we have laws to protect minors when it comes to working?
Well, this goes all the way back to truancy laws. The first truancy laws in the U.S. Date back to the 1800s, actually. The first federal truancy law in the 1930s. And of course, the expectation was that children benefit from focusing on school, and so we want to make sure that children are in school. Truancy laws in the U.S. vary by state. The lowest are you have to be in school until age 16. In some states, it's all the way up to 18. Truancy laws by themselves tend to reduce the amount of time that children are working, certainly during the school year. And so I think that efforts to have children work are in conflict with also our efforts to try to make sure that our children are getting the educational resources that they need for a successful career.
Yeah. Let's talk about the safety aspect here. Children are working some of the most dangerous jobs in the U.S. That's according to a new investigation by the New York Times. Migrant children working through the manufacturing industry in particular. This is based on interviews with 60 caseworkers, finding that 2/3 of unaccompanied migrant children end up working full-time. Child labor violations have nearly quadrupled since 2015, according to data from the Labor Department. What about this aspect, migrant children especially, and safety overall for children working?
Well, I'm sure that there are violations of existing child labor laws, and there are gaps in enforcement. I've been trying to sort of figure out exactly how they collect that type of information, and it's not the type of thing that's been in what we call refereed studies. And so it's not clear to me that some of those things are actually reliable pieces of information, but I'm sure that there are violations of existing child labor laws. Those sorts of violations are unlikely to actually be covered under this relaxation. You would still have restrictions on people working under the age. Some of the things they talk about are people under the age of 14, for example, working in manufacturing. I just don't think that this law was going to make that type of violation more common.
Mm-hmm. In the few minutes that we have remaining, I wanted to get your take on our nation's still hot inflation rate. Now, the annual inflation rate was 6% in February, a decline from last year's highs, but we are still well above historical norms. We've talked about this before on this program, Peter. Now, I wanted to get your comment on the Federal Reserve Chairman Powell's comments this week. He has undercut a central claim that Republicans make that they seek sharp cuts in federal spending, and they say government spending is driving the inflation. And Powell was asked this week whether federal tax and spending policies were contributing to this price growth. Powell pointed to a decline in federal spending from the height of the COVID pandemic, and he said, quote, "Fiscal impulse is actually not what's driving inflation right now. It was at the beginning, perhaps, but that's not the story right now." Can you help us understand this debate and those remarks by the Federal Reserve Chair?
Well, I think it's hard to argue that the huge fiscal stimulus that occurred early on in the pandemic isn't having repercussions for persistent inflation. I mean, a lot of the resources that were given to households at that period of time were saved and are now being spent. And so
I think it's still having an effect on the very strong consumer demand, which I think is having an effect on inflation. But there's still the issue of supply chain problems and the lack of supply. And I think the Federal Reserve shares my concern that we simply haven't had the type of labor supply response. And I don't think teenage labor is the solution to our labor supply problems. It was people at the other end of the age distribution who actually dropped out of the labor market. And that's been particularly true in Iowa, but it's true nationally as well. So it's people over the age of 55 who left the labor market who are not coming back. I don't see that there's any particular solution to that source of input constraint. And so we're simply just not producing enough goods and services relative to the level of demand. And I think that's what he has in the back of his mind.
Peter Erasm, professor of economics at Iowa State University, thank you again for your insights.
Well, thanks for calling. It's a pleasure.
Coming up after a short break, the first round of March Madness. Out of six Iowa teams, only one is left standing, the Hawkeye women. We'll talk about their game later today against the Colorado Buffaloes in the Sweet 16 round with Jeff Linder of the Gazette. That's when we return. It's River to River from IPR News.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it's a sports record you don't want to set, but our state did. For the first time ever, the state of Iowa lost five first-round games in a single year of March Madness. Well, that leaves the UI women, the Hawkeyes, as the only team left in the tournament. Let's get a view on this tournament and on those women still in the running from Jeff Linder, sports reporter with the Gazette. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine. For the first time ever, the state of Iowa sent six teams. Last week, we were talking about this on this program. Six teams to the men's and women's NCAA Division I tournaments. All three, well, we had three men's teams, three women's teams, ISU, UI, and Drake. Before we talk about the UI women still in the running, who will be playing later today, comment on those first five losses, those eliminations. Run through those if you could.
Yeah, well, first of all, really special accomplishment to have six teams in the tournament. It's kind of a zero-sum thing where there's a winner and a loser. Five of them lost. Iowa men were beaten in the first round by Auburn. Iowa State men were beaten. They had some shooting problems, scored 41 points in their first round loss. Drake men were in really good shape with 2 minutes to go. They had an 8-point lead against Miami of Florida. Miami came back and won that one by seven. Drake women had a really good effort, missed a few layups, a few more than I'm sure they'd have liked to have missed, but they lost a hard-fought game, 83-81 to Louisville, and you know Louisville's still going, and they're in the Sweet 16. And Iowa State women, they dropped a toughie in the first round.
Yeah,
as well.
Right you are, though, to point out it is an achievement to have those six teams make the tournament. Let's focus on the Hawkeye women playing the Colorado Buffaloes tonight. How do you see this matchup?
Well, it's a lot like their second round game against Georgia. It's kind of a matchup between Iowa's ability to score a lot of points. They lead the nation in scoring at about 87 points a game. Colorado's a little bit more defensive minded. They allow 58 points a game. I think it's going to be a really good matchup. Iowa's a slight favorite, about a 5-point favorite by most of the places you look. So it's a game that I think if Iowa brings its A or its A-minus, maybe even its B-plus game, they move on to play on
Yeah,
Sunday.
So you think it'll be similar to the game against Georgia last week, a nail-biter, in other words.
Yeah, that one came down to the wire. Iowa was up by 2, I believe, with about a minute to go. Georgia had a couple chances to tie or take the lead. They turned the ball over 3 times in a row. Iowa was able to tack on some free throws late and win that game by 8 points. Mm-hmm.
What will it take for Iowa to advance today? What will they have to do well?
They'll just have to be themselves. They're a spectacular scoring team. If they play the way they usually play, I think they'll win. If they get to play Colorado's game, slow it down a little bit, then they might be in trouble. But like I said, if they play the way they're capable, I think they're going
to
move on.
Not to get ahead of ourselves, but I know you've been looking at, in a podcast you've done there on the path to the Final Four, possible path to the Final Four. How does that look?
Well, in the second game tonight, which is at 9 o'clock Iowa time, Louisville plays Mississippi. Mississippi's a good SEC team. Louisville's got a lot of experience as far as getting deep into the tournament with Coach Jeff Walls. I think Louisville's probably going to win the second game, but again, that's should be a fairly close, exciting game. And then they play the winners play Sunday at, I believe, 8 o'clock Iowa time.
Well, Caitlin Clark, we have to talk about her, the front runner, I guess, for this year's Player of the Year. What makes her the player everyone's talking about?
Well, she's got a lot of panache. She's got a lot of personality. She'll wear her emotions on the sleeve on the court, but she's just darn good. She shoots well. She's got unlimited range, out to about 30, 35 feet. I think the thing that gets overlooked is her passing ability. She leads the nation in assists at about 8.5 a game. She's an exciting player to watch, and it's easy to see why a lot of people are drawn to watching her play.
Caitlin Clark soaking up a lot of the spotlight here in Iowa, also nationally, but several other notable players on the Hawkeye team, right?
Yeah, Monica Sinano is one of the most efficient posts in the country. She led the nation in field goal percentage in 2021 and 2022. She's fourth in that category this year. The crazy thing about her game against Georgia is she scored 20 points without dribbling the ball once. So that's efficiency.
Wow.
They get her the ball in a place where she can score without having to do a lot of maneuvering. And I think that says a lot. They've got a guard in Gabby Marshall who really slumped with her shooting early in the season, shooting about 20% through about midway into January, and then the light turned on, and she started hitting everything. The last 12 games, she's shooting close to 60% from three-point range and has really given Iowa another dimension. McKenna Warnock's a steady scorer, averaging 10 or 11 points a game. Kate Martin is kind of widely considered the glue to this team. She's probably a future coach. Just does a lot of the under the radar stuff, the defense and all that stuff. Hannah Stolke, a Cedar Rapids native, is probably the best big girl off the bench. A freshman from Cedar Rapids scores about 8 points a game, and she will be back after spraining her ankle before the second round game.
Okay, we'll be watching, seeing if the Iowa women advance in March Madness. Jeff Linder, sports reporter with the Gazette. Thank you so much, Jeff. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
It's your Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. I'm Ben Kiefer. An Oskaloosa father of 4 children and a self-described lifelong Wheel of Fortune superfan appeared on an episode of the game show this week. Here is the winning moment where Corey Hauser of Oskaloosa won big.
A nice view from the top.
Boy, that's it.
All right! Woo! Woo! Oh! Yes!
Yeah! A show that aired on this past Wednesday, the 22nd, filmed, of course, there on the set with Pat Sajak and Vanna White. Corey Hauser joins us now. Congratulations, Corey.
Thank you very much, Ben. Really appreciate it.
I heard your howls of celebration there. Your wife joined you on stage there, and you opened an envelope. What were you howling about? Because you'd just been revealed, the prize had just been revealed, right?
That's right. It was a Ford Mustang GT convertible, the beautiful red vehicle that was shown all this week for Hawaii Week that Pat and Vanna came out and walked in front of. Could not believe it. Absolutely could not believe it.
Yeah, tell me about that moment, because when I watched it here just a moment ago in replay on the internet, it looked like an overwhelming moment for you.
It absolutely was. You know, I've got a few friends in the game show community that have been on before me, and they've been pushing and pushing me to get on, and eventually I did obviously submit my tape and got on. But they both made it to the bonus round, and they had both faltered in the bonus round. And so I felt like I needed to have some sort of redeeming moment for them. And I watched the show for so long, Ben, and you can only practice so much for the show. And it just, when the RST LNE came up for the bonus round puzzle, I just knew what it was. And I called my letters, said what the answer was, as you just heard, and man, it was just one of the biggest moments of my life. And I just, if I could have jumped higher, I would have jumped higher on that stage.
We're all so happy for you and your family
in
winning. And talk a little bit more about this super fandom that you have for Wheel of Fortune. I understand you, as a kid, you dressed up for Halloween as a wheel, as a Wheel of Fortune?
I did. So I grew up watching the show. I told my parents that I wanted to be the Wheel of Fortune for Halloween, and my dad kind of like those sandwich boards that you see some people wearing outside of shops. They made me a Wheel of Fortune wheel with all the spaces, and then on the outside of it, instead of the pegs, he put Christmas lights, and they lit up, and it just basically looked like chasing lights, so it looked like the wheel was spinning. And then, if that wasn't dorky enough at the age of 8 or 9, so once Halloween was over, I took the lights off. I found a Lazy Susan that my mom had, and I put one of the cardboard wheels on there, and I would host with the board games, the Wheel of Fortune board games that I owned, I would host Wheel of Fortune for my parents. And even before that, in kindergarten, I would host Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy for my kindergarten classmates. And my kindergarten teacher, I'll give her a shout out, Mrs. Rushford from Buffalo Elementary. She sent me an email saying that she heard that she was going to be on the show, that I was going to be on the show. And she still remembers to this day that about my Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy and my game show fandom in her class. And
okay, so you've won the Wheel of Fortune. You've attained what sounds like a lifelong goal. What's left in life, Corey? Well, you've got 4 kids, you and your wife. There's a lot left in life, I'd say.
there is so much left, Ben. This is, you know, this is what everybody says. It's your 15 minutes of fame, and I'm enjoying this while it's lasting right now. This is the most popular I've ever been. but it's euphoric, you know, being able to do this. And I if there's one thing I hope does come from this, you know, obviously, you know, the benefits my family are getting from, you know, the prizes and cash that I won from the show, but I hope this encourages other people. It doesn't have to be applying for a game show. Whatever your dream is, the thing you need to do to get it going is just take the first step. And I finally, after 37 years, I took that first step in applying to be on the show, going to the website, making a 60-second video about myself, and just submitting it. And it can't, you know, you look back on it and you think, wow, that's all I had to do. I should have done this, you know, years ago, but I did it and it worked out this way. And I'm extremely happy for that. So hopefully people can learn to, you know, pursue their dreams if there's anything that comes out of this.
Nice thought to leave us with, Corey. Corey Hauser, Wheel of Fortune winner. It aired this week, was taped back in January. Corey is an Oskaloosa resident. Corey, all the best to you and your family, enjoying the fame and the winnings.
Thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate your time, and thanks for having me on the show.
And that brings us to the end of this Friday News Buzz edition of River to River from IPR News. Did you know on this date in 1955, Tennessee Williams, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, opened on Broadway? Yep, on this date in 1955. And did you know what Iowa institution Tennessee Williams got a degree from? Well, it was the University of Iowa. If you want to get on a streetcar named Desirable Music, tune your ears to IPR Studio One. Tony Daner is with us from Studio One. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Ben. I am never going to recover from that. That was an incredible intro.
I was expecting a big groan, but perhaps you turned your head and groaned.
Groaned so loudly you didn't hear it. Kind of.
Groove us into the weekend, Tony. What do you got?
So to start us off, an Iowa native named David G. Smith. He's originally from Cascade. He splits his time now between Bluegrass, Iowa, and Nashville. He's put out 10 records, all very much in the alt-country Americana genre. Four of his albums have featured appearances by Mary Gaucher and Keb Moe, two pretty big names there, Ben. David G. Smith is also heavily involved in raising money for St. Jude Children's Hospital, Boys Town, other causes. He's going to be at the Redstone Room in Davenport on April 7th, so that's going to be really cool. I'm going to be speaking to him before then. Excited about that. David G. Smith has a new album coming in June called Witness Trees, and there is one single out now. It's this one called River Gonna Talk.
DJ was a friend of mine. He used to sing to me all the time. There was his reputation, but then again, he used to sing to me and I'd sing to him. Well, I'm down here by the river, sitting beneath the tree. I'm gonna listen to the river, now the river gonna talk to me.
Love it, Tony. David G. Smith, an Iowan, River Gonna Talk, a new tune from him. We have time for one more, Tony.
Sure. So we're staying in Nashville, but we're moving from Americana to indie rock. A new song from Bully. This is the solo music project of Alicia Bugnano, kind of known for loud electric guitars. For the first time on a Bully song, she's working with another artist who should be well known to our Studio One listeners, Sophia Allison, who goes by Soccer Mommy. Soccer Mommy's featured prominently on the chorus of this song. They sound great together. Get a very 90s vibe from this song because everything is circular, so the 90s sound is kind of big in indie rock these days. Hopefully this means a new Bully album is on the way. This is Bully with Soccer Mommy on Lose You.
Okay, Tony, let's go out with that by Bully featuring Soccer Mommy and one very dirty guitar, you have to say. Lose you, Tony. Thanks for grooving us into the weekend. Remind us, how can we listen to your daily soundtrack on Studio One?
Yeah, Studio One tracks 6 nights a week at 7 o'clock Monday through Saturday. Studio One All Access, that's Saturdays at 1 o'clock, Sunday nights at 7. 24 hours a day at iprstudio1.org.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Samantha McIntosh, Caitlin Troutman, and Danny Gear. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Have a wonderful weekend.